Hello and welcome to Cruisin' for a Reviewsin', the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Cara Westworth, and today I'm joined by Maria.
Hi.
Hey, Maria. How you going?
I'm good. Lovely to be here. One of my favorite subjects.
Hell yeah. So this is going to be quite different to the normal format, which, you know, if you listen to this podcast more than one episode, you know that usually the guest has not seen the movie before, which is not the case this time.
I have seen every Tom Cruise movie, so it makes it tricky.
Yeah, it was really fucking hard to find a movie that you hadn't done. Mm. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. It's my podcast. I have done this before with another guest where we reviewed a movie they had seen. It's fine. I can do what I want. But also, we're not going to go super in-depth into the movie plot just for time reasons. And also because this movie is quite convoluted.
I mean, you can sum it up with like spy action shit, pow, 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 pow. And then you're like, cool, got it. Awesome. Let's keep moving.
So we're gonna breeze through a lot of it. And then we're going to mostly spend a bit of time debating why one of us likes this movie and one of us doesn't. Basically, we're doing Jack Reacher Never Go Back. So we're following up Jack Reacher that I reviewed last week, and we're backing it up immediately. Now, Maria famously hates this movie.
Hate it.
And I famously hate the first movie.
And I love the first movie. The first movie is legit one of my favorite Tom Cruise films ever. It's like truly a masterpiece in my mind.
My mate Andrew, who reviewed War of the Worlds with me and had seen that movie, is a massive Tom Cruise fan, and he feels the exact same way as you. Mm. And I don't fucking understand it. I don't know. I feel like I'm a bad Tom Cruise fan because I feel the opposite.
No, I don't know. That's subjective, baby. Like, you know, you're literally, I like that you're like, oh, I didn't like one film, so maybe I'm a bad Tom Cruise fan on your Tom Cruise themed podcast that's, you know, fuck knows how many episodes in, but
I feel like I'm missing something. I'm like, if all these big Tom Cruise fans love this movie, then I'm like, I'm missing something. And I've watched it a lot, and I don't know. Before we go into all that, we'll quickly go over what happens in Jack Reacher Never Go Back. This is a rare exception to the case where you should probably watch this movie so you can follow along with this podcast. Usually you don't really need to because we talk about it so in depth, but yeah, see how you go. Just quickly, the cast is obviously Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher again. There's a major Susan Turner played by Cobie Smulders, who you might know from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Speaking of Marias, that's a Maria. Yeah, baby. Maria who?
We also have Samantha, who's played by Danica Yarosh, a character called The Hunter, who's played by Patrick Heusinger, Espen, who is Aldous Hodge, and the other one I wrote down is Colonel Morgan, who is Holt McCallany.
Who we love
yeah,
him.
From Mindhunter. Like, yeah. I've never enjoyed a character as much as him on Mindhunter, and I don't know why. He reminds me of the try and save guy from The Simpsons, the security guard. I don't know. He's just got that very wholesome energy that I really like about him.
Yeah, and based on a real person. So it's like, it's truly giving.
Okay, so this is directed by Edward Zwick, who also did, what the hell's that movie? Last Samurai. One of my favorite Tom Cruise movies. They've worked together before, and I really love that movie. And this one's fine. Like, I say that I love this one compared to the other one, but I mean, that bar is really fucking low. So this movie opens, I will get into the opening bit because I think it sums up the movie, the whole Jack Reacher theme, you know, the books and everything as well, really well, where it opens on, there's been a fist fight and there's all these guys like knocked out cold or writhing around in the dirt. And all the spectators are like, oh my God, the guy who did it's in there in the diner. And it's Jack Reacher just sitting in there, a little bit roughed up. There's some sheriffs go up to him and they're like, and arrest him. And he's like, that phone's going to ring in 2 minutes. And when it does, you're in big trouble. I don't know. I hate that shit so much. Like, this is what I think I hate about Jack Reacher, is he just goes around bashing people up. And then everyone's like, no, it's fine. Jack Reacher knows what he's doing. And I hate it. This is why I'll never read the books, because that shit pisses me off so much. That's not justice. That's just bashing people up and getting away with it. Just being a white man in a white man world, I guess.
Oh, that's military shit. You know, it's like really entrenched in the character, is that sort of sense of entitlement, and not so much sense of entitlement, but the whole idea is black and white justice, which was like kind of one of the things Christopher McQuarrie like quite cleverly explored in the first one and not so much in this particular instance. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. I have a feeling that you're going to make me look back at that movie and go, oh, now I see what they were doing that for. Instead of me just being like, yuck, why they do that? Stupid.
Anyway. This is the trouble with getting a fucking screenwriter on the show. I'm like, yes, but have you considered?
And I love Christopher McQuarrie, obviously, because Mission Impossible Fallout is one of the greatest movies ever made. And I love a lot of things that Christopher McQuarrie's done. So this movie basically follows Jack Reacher, who meets up with Major Susan Turner, who has he's a little crush on, is going to go take out to dinner, but she has been arrested for, espionage. Mm. So they reckon that she had some people over in Afghanistan doing some dodgy shit, and then she was selling their secrets, and they've chucked her in jail. But what we find out pretty quickly, Yeah, it is pretty quickly. A lot happens in like 20 minutes. When I was writing all the notes down, I'm like, oh my God, 20 minutes have passed. So she's been falsely accused. Basically, some big military contractor who sells weapons to the US lost
always
a bunch of
military contractor. Always. Every time.
Both movies, it's military, like something to do with military contractors.
Yeah.
Fucking up. Because they are doing dodgy shit, black market stuff, in fact, over there, and she must have sussed it out somehow. They are like, uh-oh, we need to cover this up in the most elaborate, silly way possible. That's where this guy called the Hunter is. He's like an assassin, a former Marine or something. He's an assassin who's chasing after everyone the whole time, kind of like one of those horror movie villains. He's just always sort of following them slowly, and they keep running around trying to get away from him. Jack goes to meet Kobe Smulders' character, Susan Turner, finds out she's in jail, wigs out, and he is chucked into the same jail as her. I think the lawyer gets killed or something. So her lawyer gets killed after talking to Jack Reacher by the Hunter, and he frames it so that Jack Reacher gets accused of it and gets chucked into jail, which is very convenient because he is then able to bust her out of jail really quickly and efficiently. So yeah, he busts her out of jail and they basically go on the run. So this movie, in contrast to the first Jack Reacher, actually has a lot of running.
Oh my God.
First movie has none.
Seriously, the scene, there's so many things that I hate about this movie, but in particular, one of the things that I strongly dislike, the transitions or lack thereof between scenes. And one of the most visceral memories I had from seeing this film in the theater was this hard cut of a scene. So they're like, there's like a conversation, and then they hard cut to Colby Smulders and Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise running across a fucking lawn in the middle of the day. And they're not running from anything. You know what I mean? Like, they obviously need to get somewhere quickly, but it's literally like, fuck, we really need a running shot. You know what? We'll just put it here. And so they're doing the full like karate air chopping wind, sprinting across the middle of a park. Could not be more conspicuous if you tried. And I just remember like being absolutely sort of delighted, horrified with that scene, because I was like, oh man, they would never do this in the first one. And then the second one is, I think they're at an internet cafe. They're either coming from or to an internet cafe.
They're going to an internet cafe.
Which is how I quickly. That's how I run to an internet cafe. It's like, okay, we're trying to be low key. We don't want anyone to notice us. Like, let's just keep it chill by sprinting in broad daylight, full speed, Usain Bolt style, in military uniforms towards an internet cafe. Cool.
Also, this movie was made in 2016. Like, an internet cafe, really? Because do they still exist? Maybe in America they do. I don't know.
Well, it's also about like context as well. Like, in a lot of lower socioeconomic areas, there are a high population of internet cafes, right? Because owning a personal computer isn't not just an expense, but like a privilege. But in Egypt, they're literally everywhere. Like, you fucking can't throw a rock and hit an internet cafe. There's so many of them. But this is not where they are. So the fact that it's just like, whatever, semantics, who cares? But still, it was just, tickled me.
So one of the things that comes up during his trying to find out what the hell's going on with Susan Turner is he is told that he maybe has a child. So basically a woman that he's has apparently had liaisons with has gotten pregnant and had his child.
Liaisons. They fucked. He blew her back out and like fucking did a huge big dirty cum in her pussy and had a child. Like,
it comes in her pussy. Yeah. All right, we're going to be that. I say like I'm not the most lowbrow person. So he knocked her up, apparently. She's filed for paternity. He was completely unaware of this, but there's a file and he like sleight of hand nicks the photo of her to be remembered for later. So yeah, they're on the run. They go to see Colonel Morgan, who is like the replacement for Turner, and they confront him. They think he's in on it. And by them going there, the Hunter comes not long after and is like, Jack Reacher touched his phone. He's like, yes, why? And then bashes him to death with the phone. So constantly trying to accuse Jack Reacher of doing awful shit. it and getting away with this. I mean, that was the whole thing of the first movie is like, this girl's been knocked out cold, knocked out dead with one punch. Who else could it be? And Jack Reacher's like, me, I'm the strongest man in the world. That's fucking
I do love that. I love that scene. It's so fucked. Poor Sandy. Like, oh God, I think about her all the time. Hope she, well, I mean, she's dead, but hope that actress as well.
He's like, leave town. And I'm like, why would you leave? Why? Some fucking asshole who terminates your work tells you maybe you should leave town. You're not going to, but also please leave town. You're going to get punched in the head so hard that you die.
100%. I'd go. Well, not that she died instantly. It's like, it's the smothering afterwards that really like sealed the casket. But I don't know. He was convincing. I'd leave. She was wrapped up in all sorts of shit. That pub scene was ugly. I'd be like, yeah, actually, you know what? I am going to dip. That's a great idea. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Disney World for like 2 days, see how I go.
Yeah. Just like go on vacay and then come back, see who's still alive, and then assess from there. You would have had Werner Herzog out here like trying to get people to bite their fingers off, and you could just have avoided that whole situation.
Exactly. Poor Sandy. If only she knew.
Poor Sandy.
There's so much fucking happens in this movie, but also not a lot. Like a lot of needless detail that's quite boring. Bit of running, which is pretty fun. The reason why we're alerted to the potential daughter situation is because she's wrangled into it. They're like, well, we now know that he might be has a daughter, so we're going to go get her to get Jack Reacher, which she does. And Jack Reacher, being who he is like, I don't know if she's my daughter, but I'm going to save her life anyway. So that introduces the character of Samantha. What did you think of the character of Samantha?
Didn't love it. And I particularly didn't love it because it felt like, I think when you have a really deep bank of source material, like they do with these novels, right? There's over 30, I think, and they have been going on for a really long time, right? So you have lots of source material to pull on. So my frustration with the daughter B/C plot is I felt like you really already covered that in the first film. They really do a good job of sort of threading in all these little moments that he has and the way he interacts with women. So like, for instance, when he calls Sandy a massive slut in the bar, which is just
fuck,
like,
I hate that bit so much.
Oh my God, the delivery, everything is just crazy. But so you're like, oh, okay. But then in the context of the conversation afterwards, it's like he had clearly clocked her, understood the sitch, blah, blah, blah. And he's saying some wild shit to try and get a reaction and basically like act as a catalyst to move whatever confrontation's going to happen forward faster. Anyway, but the fact that he spends time after that and this woman who's helped put him in jail to go and warn her and be like, get the fuck out of the town. Are you insane? And then that there is genuine, like when he pulls up and he sees the cops and stuff, that there is genuine regret, and also the way he sort of handles the Rosamund Pike situation. They kind of already tapped into what I call Wolverining, which is like in X-Men comics and then X-Men, the animated series in the 90s in particular, there was this thing where it's just like Wolverine's just like fucking loves a teenage runaway, like just adopting girls who aren't his daughters, just left, right, you know. There's so like, there's literally like a dozen sort of like ratbag teenage girls who Wolverine becomes like their surrogate father in one way or the other. But it's this plot device that gets used a lot in the context of those stories. So they kind of did that with Jack Reacher, and I'm like, that's fine. You needed a thing to show that he has empathy and, you know, isn't like a testosterone-y dickhead, even though that's like kind of exactly what he is, right? But it's like to sort of sand off those edges. Anyway, you already did that in the first film. So when they add all this stuff, it felt like a shitter version of what they had already done with that. And also the sort of like traction towards using A, women, but B, innocent women, or like young women who can't physically protect themselves as a plot device to humanize otherwise unsympathetic characters is like a gripe of mine, I guess you could say, especially when they'd already done it. So I'm just like, well, let's just fucking keep it moving. I don't need him to have a maybe not daughter to be like, oh, he's a person. Yep. There's so many other cool things they could have drawn on and touched on. And so I was just like, this felt super unnecessary to me.
Well, even Christopher McQuarrie, because he, I believe, wrote the screenplay for this, he said that the biggest failing for this movie is that they introduced the concept of a daughter when that was like the 18th book or something. So we weren't super invested in Jack Reacher, so why the fuck would we care that he has a daughter?
I just want to say real quick, because I love me boy McQuarrie. I interviewed him once. He was super lovely, very insightful filmmaker, like truly, like really fascinating guy, really knows his shit. So he's not credited as a writer on this. There's three credits: Richard Wenk, Edward Zick, and Marshall Herskovitz, who, if you don't know who Marshall Herskovitz is. He'd done Last Samurai and a few other bits and bobs. Importantly, he's also the screenwriter of I Am Sam, which is truly everything you need to know. But Macquarie was the EP on this. And so as part of like being the EP, you get like a executive producer pass, if you will. But that was just one of the things that I immediately noticed, is because I feel like one of the reasons Jack Reacher 2012, feels weird to say that, or like Jack Reacher 1 is so good, is because Christopher Macquarie is the sole credited screenwriter, and he's also the director and the producer or whatever. And I think there's just a lot of things that happen in this movie that I was just like, I don't know if Macquarie would have fallen into these traps if his past work is anything to go by.
But yeah, it was something that stuck with me, is that, yeah, I don't care about this daughter. I didn't care much for the actress who plays Samantha. Neither. And yeah, I don't give a shit. And then basically, big, massive spoiler, in the end, turns out she's almost definitely not his daughter.
Which was so obvious as well. Like, because that was, it was just...
he only thought it because she was a bit sneaky and kind of made similar decisions to what he'd make. I'm like, what? That's not a...
I know. That's just so funny.
Her ice white blonde hair.
I know. There's other stuff as well. Like, because that supporting cast, I think, is one of the other weaknesses of the film, right? Aldis Hodge, who, in my opinion, invented wearing pants. Like, pants have never looked as good as they do on Aldis Hodge's body. But Kobe Smulders, yeah. Holt McKelly, as much as I love him, and Aldis Hodge, and the Hunter guy, whatever, he's fine. He's got a nice face and shit. They're fine. They're all perfectly fine and they're perfectly serviceable. But again, to compare and contrast to the first film, which is the whole point if you have a sequel, it's really hard to go up against Rosamund Pike, like truly one of the great actresses of her generation working right now. Jai Courtney, the best performance he's ever done in a largely dialogue-less role. He's never been better still to this day than he was playing that fucking sort of like silent, scary offsider. Werner Herzog, absolutely bizarre, out of the box casting. And like Richard Jenkins and David Oyelowo, like that's just insane. Let alone those minor parts, like fucking Robert Duvall as the gunny who comes in later, and like the Sandy chick, like she's just like a bit player who's like on the come up. She's really good. There's this other Aussie guy called Josh Hellman who's he's played lots of things. He's in the X-Men franchise, but he's one of the guys at the bar, but he's most famous for Mad Max Fury Road. He plays the Nux's like best friend, if that makes sense, if you could call them friends. Yeah. So that guy. So this, and he's also in Animal Kingdom and a few other like bits and bobs. But the bank of people in that first film are so good. Like the B cast and then the C cast. Like no parts are wasted. Even I always think of the bus stop scene where you have the side shuffling and like the guy gives him his hat and the other people cover, like, you know, walk in front of him to hide where he is physically. That's a kind of throwaway scene. Those people don't need to be as good as they are, but they're so good. Like every single person, even the doofus dudes who are like having the fight and they keep knocking each other out in the house. Like, I don't know, just every bit player really, there was just no wasted casting. And then it got to this and I was like, oh, fuck me. There's just a few parts that I would have maybe thought about differently, or maybe it was a time thing, you know, that's who's available and who they can access. But
well, watching the, like just before we did this, I was watching a little behind the scenes stuff because I've got the Blu-ray. Apparently not a very big budget. And I don't know how much time was a problem, but yeah, apparently budget was a big deal for them. So that's why pretty much everything is filmed in New Orleans, including all the DC stuff. Like when they're running, it's just a park and they just CGI'd in all the buildings. So they just didn't have the money to, I guess, to have any good actors.
But the thing that's so crazy about that is they had an additional $36 million compared to the first film. Like the budget for this is like $96 million.
And what? I didn't even look that up. Are you kidding me? Why were they blaming the budget then?
Well, this is the thing. So the budget's $96 million for this one. The budget for the first one is $60 million, which is actually like, for the kind of film this is, expensive, but $60 million for Jack Reacher 1, every single cent of that's really going to the cast because of that. Not just Tom, obviously, but he would take less money to be given points on the back end or whatever. But it's because like the next 10 people are all notable and have deep banks of work. So it's just like, fuck, they got an additional $36 million for the sequel. Which on its own, even if you didn't have the other $60 million, in like $100 million $10 million for a movie like this is insane. Insane. You don't make a C-grade superhero movie. It's like Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey is a movie that gets made for like $50, $60 million. Are you fucking crazy? You're telling me this cost almost double Birds of Prey? That's nuts to me.
I didn't have a chance to look that up, and I'm shook and furious that they were blaming money reasons.
Imagine being like, imagine having $96 million to make a movie and being like, yeah, you know, it's just really tough. Hey, we're just all out here grinding, just making it work day to day, however we can. It's like, holy shit. People, for $9 million, I feel you, but for fucking 96, absolutely wild.
Jesus, that's wild. Well, you're successfully making me want to go rewatch the first one and then go punch the second one in the face now. So
sorry, I don't want to push my agenda. Nah. I will say Jack Reacher 1, compare and contrast. I think I would say the definitive reason, but it has a real, outside of Tom Cruise fans, like people who are not ride or die Cruise heads, if you will, they really love that film almost in spite of him. But in particular in like film worlds, people really appreciate that movie, or at least the appreciation of that movie stems from like a lot of weird choices that are extremely unconventional for a Hollywood action movie that has arguably the most famous movie star of the past 40 years in it. And the biggest one is the opening 12 minutes are completely dialogue free. There's like not a single word spoken. And I often hear that opening sort of, it's a montage, I guess you could say, mentioned a lot and referenced a lot conversationally with people, or like used as a reference point, like, oh, blah, 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 like Jack Reacher. Oh man, how good was that? Yada, yada, Jack Reacher. And then on YouTube, there's all these videos that are breaking down that scene and all the things that it has. And then like the conversion of like what was on the page and what was filmed and how that works and blah, blah, blah. But it was just such an unconventional and really restrained choice for a film that is, and a genre that is the complete opposite of that. That I think when I came to the second one, which maybe if the first one hadn't been so good, in my personal opinion, I wouldn't have been as disappointed with this. But I was expecting some of those choices, you know, like I was expecting some really smart, clever, interesting little flips on the genre in a certain way that just didn't exist, you know? And I think that's like, that's what you get from an absence of Christopher McQuarrie. Like you've seen what he's done with the Mission Impossible movies. You know, he's basically reinvigorated the spy genre and changed the conventions of like what it could be. Edge of Tomorrow, another film that I think is like one of Tom Cruise's best movies, is a Christopher McQuarrie joint. I'm laughing because I was just about to be like, and The Mummy, which I love, but people hate.
I don't know why people hate that movie as much as they do. I
know, people are assholes.
I can see why. Like, there's some things when I approach it as a Tom Cruise fan now, I'm like, yeah, this isn't, there's some things that aren't great, but I'm like, it's still really fun. Like, it's still.
Well, you know, I have this whole theory about what fucked that film, and it was the release of the trailer first that had the ADR switch up. So if you don't know, like for those listening, you're like, what do you mean? When the first trailer for The Mummy came out, somebody got fired over this. It was a whole thing. There's a really good sort of like oral history of this on Vulture. And basically the trailer that gets put up it hasn't been sound mixed correctly. So they have like all these like weird like noises and blah, 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 and the score's missing and yada, yada, but they have placeholder sound effects. So it gets to the bit at the end, which is like one of the really cool scenes of the movie, which, you know, they shot in like a anti-gravity chamber thingy. I don't know the specific terms. Anyway, where the plane's going down and people are flying around everywhere. And the noises sound exactly like, and I'm going to do an impression, but this is 100% what it sounds like when you go back and watch it. They're like, no. And like, that's the first, like they pulled it down, but it didn't get pulled down fast enough. Like people had already downloaded it and saved it and shit. And it was a huge news story for like that entire week. Fucking Twitter was having a field day. And thank God it was like before the age of TikTok, because it would have been like all over Red Rover. But all of that to say, I feel like that was so funny and such a dumb fucking, like such a huge fuck up already for a movie where they were really trying to make you take a high concept, a kind of a dumb premise, premise seriously. And if your people's first exposure to that is a fucked up trailer, then immediately it's like, it was kind of too late from there. It was really hard. You're never going to get people back. You're already trying to win them over. And it's like, nah, not happening.
And the whole Dark Universe, even though I was so stoked for a Dark Universe, it was too much. It's too much. Like, most people are like, oh, Dark Universe. The movie hasn't even come out and you're already talking about this Dark Universe and you've already cast everyone and doing these fancy portrait photos of everyone. Oh. I'm like, no one's going to take kindly to this. Like, everyone's going to be.
It's also the sidebar-y bit of like the first shared cinematic universe, which is a big selling point these days. Everyone wants a fucking shared cinematic universe, is the Universal Movie Monsters, right? They crossed over into each other's films. It was like shared world building. You had actors and crew members working on, you know, each of the different ones, blah, blah, blah. So there's a legacy there for it. But they did put out this trailer for the Dark Universe, which was basically looking back at the history of the Universal Movie Monsters. That it's my favorite thing in the world, Universal Movie Monsters films, world building, design, everything. So I was really moved and really touched by it and was really caught up in that whole world and like just was extremely invested. And so it was really heartbreaking on a professional level because they were doing these things in Hollywood. They will do these. That's not like a Hollywood thing. It's a whatever. It's just like, this is how they fucking do it now. For Transformers Bumblebee, for instance, that film came out of a Transformers writer's room where you put writers together and everyone just like fucking spitballs and comes up with ideas. Marvel do them in-house, obviously super secret, but that's kind of like where Guardians of the Galaxy came from. It's these sort of like writer's room scenarios. And so I had been hired on a Dark Universe writer's room that was kicking off after The Mummy. And while Bride of Frankenstein was in pre-production in London with Bill Condon at Pinewood Studios. And it was like the job of my lifetime. Genuinely, my dream come true. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. I'm going to get to work. Oh my God, this is so amazing. Signed the contract and I think I signed the contract on a Thursday and by the Monday, the whole Dark Universe was dead.
Oh, that's so fucked.
So the whole thing was just like, it was absolutely, I was just like, oh fuck. And it was like, it was so early in my screenwriting career. Well, say, what was it? 2017, 2018. Anyway, whatever. It's like many years now. And it's just like, oh shit, like that happens all the time. It's not actually that special or interesting. But at that point in my career, it was just like getting punched in the tit for fucking 24 hours. I was so crushed. And it was so heartbreaking to see all these people being like online, especially being like, ah, ha, 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 suck shit, Dark Universe. This is what you get. Bap, 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 bap. And I was just like, there could have been something really special here. And I think you see that with Lee Whannell and what he did with Invisible Man and what they will do with Wolfman, hopefully, the Ryan Gosling joint. But it was just like, I cried over it, genuinely cried over it.
No, I want to cry for you. That's like, even without your, and like how much I know that you love Universal Monsters, like that in itself sounded like a really fun job. And then it's like, we fucked it. Sorry.
It would have been so cool.
See you later.
And you just never know too from those jobs because honestly, like most writer's room gigs, you do it for the, you know, whatever. They hire you for a specific thing, blah, blah, blah. But the work that you pick up from a writer's room because of the producers you're exposed to or the other writers that you're exposed to leads down all these interesting, squirrely little different paths. And, you know, you get to that point eventually kind of anyway if you have a very specific brand and you're chasing specific things. But it was just, I don't know. It was kind of like the earth is about to explode and you're like racing for the fucking last rocket that's about to go like to non-Earth planet and you just miss it and you're like and it's just like flying off into the distance as you're trying
and
to
it Tom burns
Cruise
your hand
run.
As you're reaching out to it
you're like fuck that's kind of what it feels like. Anyway, that was really off topic from Jack Reacher, but there you go.
That was fascinating. This is why I got you on here, Maria. I could just do an entire podcast dedicated to things Maria knows about the film industry that I didn't know about.
And there's another one about all the shit I don't know, but...
As far as the movie goes, they end up in New Orleans. They're basically chasing this one guy who was a witness to some of the dodgy shit happening over in Afghanistan with this military contractor, Parasource. And they go and try and find him. I found it really fun just running through the airport because you don't see too many airport chase scenes. And
I was thinking about that the other day, actually, because I was so random rewatching Red Sparrow, the universally reviled Jennifer Lawrence. giant spy movie.
I have not seen that yet.
Let's be honest with you, I really enjoy it. It's like, there's like 86 problematic things with it and a whole bunch of stuff and a sex scene with underpants on that really fucking frustrates me. But there is a really kind of like one of the big sort of crescendos. I'm trying to talk and I cannot do it. There's a really big moment in an airport where Joel Edgerton's character is kind of in pursuit of her, and it's happens. I think they're filming it. In the film, it's supposed to be Heathrow, but eyeballing it, I was like, I don't know if they're actually filming at Heathrow. It kind of looks a little bit more like Gatwick Airport, which would be easy to film in. But it was such a cool scene and so tense. And I was just like, you just very rarely ever see that. And even the like New Orleans stuff is kind of really cool too, because that felt like a real throwback to me. Like, I don't know if you were a big John Grisham fan, but Lee Child, John Grisham, you know, kind of head to head sort of through the 90s, writing different types of books, but they were frequent, regular big sellers, right? Quite competitive. But in the 90s, and to link it to Tom Cruise and The Firm, every 9 to 12 months, there was a new John Grisham thing getting made for literally 12 years, just like every single year in cinemas. And then there'd also be shit happening on screen simultaneously. It was like a whole bit, like the Susan Sarandon movie, The Client, for instance, like gets made for television, and like The Firm's had like two or three television remakes anyway. But that was such a beat of John Grisham stuff in the 90s, those John Grisham type sort of like political intrigue, which is this Jack Reacher's way more political intriguey than the first film. They always had these big exterior scenes and shots in New Orleans. And like New Orleans was always such a big feature. There's a really cool, like Stanley Tucci's about to kill Julia Roberts in The Pelican Brief, and they're doing it in daylight at this kind of like daytime carnival thing. And it's just like, there was lots of stuff like that when I was watching this, and I was like, oh, that kind of, I wonder if these people are John Grisham fans, or like if that's kind of a little wink to that era of film, because those kind of movies don't get made anymore. The closest you kind of got to it is the film adaptation of the really great British miniseries State of Play. And that's sort of, again, military contractor. And that's kind of like as close as you get. They just don't make those sort of movies anymore.
Which is kind of funny that you don't see much in New Orleans as well, considering how many films actually get made down there as well. Like the film,
so much TV too. Like, you know, all the Vampire Diaries, originals, like legacies, all of those, like any teen who's like been bitten by something at some point is like that show's filming in New Orleans.
And famously, the very wonderful Interview with the Vampire, which Tom Cruise in another thing was like, the last thing he shot there was Interview with the Vampire. And I was like, oh yes, I forgot about that momentarily.
Did you, this is off topic, but also interesting. Did you see that there's been a lot of like discourse at the moment about Kiki Dunst, and in the lead up to sort of Power of the Dog being in contention for not only Best Picture and all that shit, but her having a real shot at Best Actress and maybe scoring her first nomination, which she should have got for Melancholia and Marie Antoinette, but whatever. Anyway, she was doing this interview about auditioning for Interview with a Vampire and talking about how like everybody, every kid actor was going out for that part. And it gets to the final audition and it's like 10 girls and Tom Cruise. And so it was like a chemistry read, right? So he has to pick up each of the girls and like do these little scenes with him and whatever. And it's like, you know, some of it's scripted, some of it's like just to see if the kids can, you know, react on their feet. Anyway, of all the girls, she's the tallest, and they were looking for an actress that was like looked young, you know, like, cause that's the whole character is sort of supposed to be this angelic / evil doll thing. So Tom Cruise picks her up to do the scene and he whispers to her, he's like, tuck your legs in, tuck your legs in. So he was like getting her to tuck her legs in so that she could appear shorter when he was carrying her around, because she was his favorite and he wanted her to get the part.
Aww, that's so cute.
Super cute. Super cute.
Imagine being that role. Like, that feels like the role of a lifetime. Like, how many people think of that movie and specifically think of that character?
It's like the signature child actor role, because you're actually getting to do something. Two, it was like the start of her career. A lot of people don't necessarily think of her as a child actor, because she has very quickly and kind of always debunked the stereotype that comes with child acting that people think of, you know, oh, they're messy, they have a breakdown, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, motherfucker, she was consistently working and consistently like just fucking chopping it up from like age 6 and 7 onwards, like Scarlett Johansson. And it's just because she kind of like isn't very flashy in terms of like, she just gets her work done and moves on to the next thing, that I feel like a lot of times she gets gets overlooked, both performance wise and just genuinely. Like, it's such a good kid role. Like, she's so good in that. Truly one of her best.
So the whole New Orleans thing, so set at Halloween. So on a Halloween night is when the big chase happens.
Yeah,
and she runs through the big parade. When I was watching this, I was like, I'm so pissed off. When I've been to New Orleans once, it was only for a few days, and we went on November 1st and we'd spent the 31st Halloween in Las Vegas, and it was crap. Like, we missed out on the parade there because we had something else booked. And then we got to New Orleans and I'm like, why the fuck was I not here? And I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know that they actually had big Halloween parades too. I'm like, what a fucking waste. So that scene pisses me off for very personal reasons, but it was very fun. And I love all the big, all the props and all the big, huge masks that were specially made, and all the extras of people who were just like, hell yeah, we'll pretend it's Halloween.
Yeah. I love a Halloween set piece in a film. Like, I just fucking absolutely love to see it.
Yeah. And you don't see it very often, really.
You don't. And because, you know why? Because it's expensive. Not only do you have to physically deck out all the sets and everything like that, blah, 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 but you have to make sure every extra and how many extras you have in a scene, that everyone is in a proper costume and that it aesthetically matches whatever your Halloween palette is. So in terms of like a time and cost effect thing, and I mean, they only had $96 million to make this movie, so they were really scraping fucking pennies together. But it is one of those things that it's just like, it's a time suck, so people would just rather skip it, you know?
I did notice, especially this time watching it, everyone, there's like, I don't know what the term is, the actual score music playing, and then you can hear all the people like cheering and they're all dancing, and I'm like, but what are they dancing to? Like, made me laugh a lot. Like, oh, come on, could you not have used the ambient music as part of the music of the movie? No, we have to have fancy score music.
I know.
Oh, that was a bit cringe. Anyway, there's a big chase scene, and basically the hunter, even though it's all been resolved, like, Susan Turner figures out that they were actually using weapons to import opium from Afghanistan, and there's a nice big dramatic scene where they do a big reveal. She thinks they're doing black market sales of weapons in the Middle East to insurgents, but all the guns are accounted for, and then that's when Jack Reacher's like, wait a minute, and bashes one of the fucking grenade launchers open, and it's full of all the opium comes tumbling out. So that's all resolved. But the hunter is like, you fucking crossed me, mate, and so I'm gonna bash up the daughter, may or may not be yours, and
sometimes
I'm gonna
let it out, you know. And if there's a 14 year old semi-good actress nearby, that's where the story's going,
and you're gonna chase her around and just fucking murder her. So they get to have the big chase scene through the French Quarter in New Orleans, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to in my life, and you know, I find that bit fun. Maybe that's why I like this movie so much. I get to see New Orleans, I don't know, and there's Halloween involved. I was like, oh yes, this is actually my I'm the target.
You're like,
here,
my favorite time of the year is Jack Reacher Never Go Back, hashtag 31 days of Halloween, like
truly. Jack Reacher and the hunter have a nice, like, really intimate fight. They're very tired by this point, so it's a very, like, sloppy, tired fight. And Jack Reacher, I think he snaps the hunter's neck twice, like, from front and back. Yeah, did a really good job, really thorough job. And yeah, Turner's name is cleared. They are all like pretty stoked with themselves. And we find out then that Jack Reacher is not Samantha's mother, because he encounters Samantha's mother, which is all set up by Samantha. And because he said, I remember every woman that I sleep with. And so she's like, well, that woman served you coffee like three times. So if you didn't recognize her.
I mean, I guess they like do weave that into the story, you know, that he has like borderline photographic memory and all that kind of shit. But it's just the way that it's said is, I'm just like, come on. Really? Like, who fucking remembers every person they slept with? You know what I mean?
Also, maybe he needed to see her naked to, I don't know, to know. Maybe he doesn't remember the face. Maybe he remembers
maybe
other parts
of her. Maybe she has like a... Maybe she has like a big old fucking birthmark that's like, Jack Reacher was here. And he's like, oh my God, that's right. I was. I totally forgot.
I did do a big cum in her pussy.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I was like, nah, she got mad the first time. Walk it back.
No, please, be as vulgar as you like. Okay, that's the movie. If you wanted to hear more about the movie, you're just going to have to fucking watch it. Like I said, I enjoy it at a very base level. Like, I find it enjoyable. I think to go into why I think I like this one more than the first one is...
I'm dying to know
the character of Jack Reacher. I find, I can't read the books because the whole, just the thought of him pisses me off. The fact that everyone was so mad that Tom Cruise got cast because he's not tall enough. I'm like, being tall isn't a personality trait. I don't know why people are so fucking hung up on this.
Nah, and it's also, this is the deal, right? Like, I have this theory that there are oftentimes people confuse being a great movie star for being a great actor. And off, like, they're different things. Sometimes you get a rare beast, like a Margot Robbie, for instance, who is both a good actor and a good movie star. Tom Cruise is a great movie star, and great movie stars shine so bright that oftentimes you're blinded to the things they're not so great at. Magnolia is what I'm talking about specifically. Tame the pussy. But if the difference between this character that you love existing on the big screen is Tom Cruise being cast as him, or the thing doesn't get fucking made, what would you want? Because I sure as shit know that if I loved a thing, I'm like, oh damn, he's 6'6 in the book, but I sounded so Kiwi then. He's 6'6 in the book, but Tom Cruise is short. Brr. But it's like, okay, but like, would you just rather it not exist? Because if you bring Tom Cruise to the project, A, you know it's going to get fucking made. He's very selective with the things that he chooses to do. He also produces everything that he's in at this point. So you know that the production's going to be of a certain quality, and because it's Tom Cruise, there's going to be X amount of eyeballs on it. So it's the best shot you fucking possibly have of getting to see, of as many people as possible, getting to see this thing that you love. The other thing is there's other traits to Jack Reacher and other qualities that they feel are much more important to imbue than whether this person is as vertically similar as a fucking character from a book. Like, does he have that command, that smartassness, that kind of like shade of malice, you know, that threat that sort of like underlines everything? Like, that's the shit that a Tom Cruise movie star brings to it, rather than like, oh, cool, so we cast Chris Hemsworth because he's tall and shit. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know if Chris Hemsworth can carry this movie. Chris Hemsworth has very specific skills that work great for him, but he can't be fucking Jack Reacher. So you either get the height or you get a good movie, and those are your choices. I just like, everyone needs to shut the fuck up about it. I get so annoyed of a shit like that. I was like, do you not want to see it? I don't understand.
They're like, oh, The Rock should have been in it. We're like, well, The Rock's not in it. So you take the movie that you're given, or you...
And you can't have a character of color playing this white man, you know, like, give The Rock his own movie franchise. Like, he has 86 different ones of them. Like, The Rock's is fucking busy. He hasn't got time for your bullshit. But at the same time, like, all of these things that are wrapped up and make Jack Reacher who he is, the whole fucking character changes if it's a person of color, you know, like the whole dynamic completely changes, and the way he operates changes, and the way he navigates through the military and the world changes. So then suddenly it's not Jack Reacher anymore, but you got your height thing. Like, ugh, no, thank you. Dumb.
It's ridiculous.
People are dumb.
Overall, just based on these two movies, I don't like the character of Jack Reacher. Like, I get why he was an asshole in the first movie. Like, I, at a base level, understand why he's the way he is. I just don't like it. I just don't like that character. And I feel like he was less horrible in the second one. Like, he wasn't fucking bashing first, asking questions later, as he was in the first movie. And I know that's Jack Reacher's whole thing. I just don't like it. And so I liked how he was a bit more chilled out in the second one. And so I enjoyed it a little bit more for that reason. Maybe, like I said, maybe it's just the fucking New Orleans stuff gives me a thrill, and that's why I like it. I actually can't work out why I like one more than the other, and you've given me a lot to think about, and I'm going to go watch the first one again and try and look at it through a less critical, less personal lens, and more of a like a filmy lens. I struggle with that. Like, everything I watch is through how I, Kara Westworth, see the world. And
but it's also, I think that's a good way to view things too. Like, sometimes, like Red Sparrow, I know objectively bad movie, but I fucking really enjoy it. I'm just like, I love it. I rewatch it all the time. Like, it's really enjoyable. Jack Reacher, I rewatch all the time, but I know it's and it's one of those films too that's been a real like grower, not a shower. Like, when the first Jack Reacher movie came out, people were like, it's fine, I guess. Like, I'm a bit surprised Tom Cruise is dedicating his time to something like quite suburban. Anyway, fast forward like literally a decade, and the regard that that first film is held in is completely different. It's considered like a bit of a fucking masterwork for that kind of movie in that sort of like subgenre threshold. You know, there's just so much shit in it that's so clever, from the screenplay to the interactions between the characters to some of the action set pieces to really understanding the talents of every single person you've cast in that film and what their strengths and what their weaknesses are. Like, I don't know if anyone has ever better utilized Jai Courtney in a thing ever than they have. Like, he's fine as Captain Boomerang, whatever, but
he's pretty good as Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, totally. But that first film, I'm like, we never got to see him be that good again. You know, it was just like, I totally get why people had been trying to make Jai Courtney happen for a decade, because he's just so, like, Jack Reacher's his first thing and you're like, fuck, this guy is good. And I still believe he is good. I just think he hasn't made the best choices, maybe.
We haven't gone to this movie very much. I guess we'll just quickly talk about the, what do you call them? Tom Cruise-isms. Tom Cruise does all his own stunts. Kobe Smulders does all her own stunts too. We're watching them all do all the stunts, and the stunt directors were like, well, I could try and get someone else to do the stunts, but no one can do them better than Tom Cruise. So just let Tom Cruise do them. So yeah, just Tom Cruise doing all his own stunts as usual. We're past the point where that surprises anyone anymore, I hope. Although sometimes I have like clients and stuff, like, Tom Cruise does all his own stunts. I'm like, where the fuck have you been?
Have you not seen him sitting on a fucking skyscraper in Dubai? Where are you?
What the hell? Didn't have to like Tom Cruise to know this. This is the first Jack Reacher movie where he actually runs. In the first one, no running. The compromise is we didn't get a sick car chase scene like in the first
that
movie.
Car chase was so dope.
So good. Honestly, in that first movie, one of my favorite things is at the end of the car chase where how he gets out the car and just runs into the crowd.
Just walks off. Again, like, and one of the things that's so cool and then completely fucking undermined in this film is like he really shows an understanding of civilian behavior and the conduct of like how you work and operate in a certain space. If he was running in that scene, he looks immediately obvious and it's nighttime. So you walk towards where everyone else is, you blend in, you be cool, you blah, blah, blah. And then it's hard cut to this movie. He's like, I guess sprinting in daylight will keep me unawares. I'm like, oh, did you learn nothing?
Yeah, did he get a head injury and forgot everything that he's ever learned in the military?
Seriously.
Oh dear. As for other Tom Cruise-isms, there's not really any others. Like, there's no, at no point does Jack Reacher get drunk and have his little monologue. He doesn't do any of the specific Tom Cruise-isms of him being like laughing and showing that toothy grin of his. I don't feel like Jack Reacher's a super Tom Cruise-y character.
There's the whole smartest man in the room thing, which I always associate as being very Tom Cruise-y. Like,
that's
he
a good
often,
one.
Yeah, like The Firm and stuff like that. Like, he often satisfies, that's not the right word, but he sort of scratches that itch a lot with his roles. It's like he's always the guy who like knows more than everyone else, or like has a thing. He's like the wunderkind. Like, he played that type of role a lot early in his, like, Maverick, you know, you see in Top Gun, and just even like shit like Cocktail and just all those sort of like early roles in the 80s and 90s. Well, let's just say the 80s. And then even Mission Impossible, like, he's always the best, the chosen one, the smart one, et cetera, et cetera. The only time is like a sort of War of the Worlds, which I think is one of the really jarring, like, whenever he tries to play a piece of shit, it never quite works because it is so far. And that's also kind of the same thing with The Mummy, is he like plays a character who's like, yeah, exactly. And I think because his public persona is very much like, I do all my own stunts, I'm the best at this, I'm the best at that, don't look at the Xenu stuff over here, look at me doing all this other cool shit. I'll show up for my red carpets an hour and a half before everyone else to sign and film and do whatever for everything that he's ever made, because I'm a fucking professional movie star and like that's the job. But anytime he's not playing a sort of like a version of that, a scent or an undertone of that, I think the audience struggles to connect with the characters in the same way.
Oh, definitely. Like, even though I love War of the Worlds to death.
Same.
Like,
it's genuinely terrifying.
It is like a little bit jarring where he's just a no-hope dad.
Just a no-hope dad.
And also the one thing that they set up at the start of that movie is that he's really good at being a crane operator and he never gets to use that. Like, there was never a point where they're like, we're going to make him do some fucking cool crane operating shit.
Yeah, I was getting ready for like an alien, like, get away from her, you bitch thing. Like, I don't know how cranes work, but like, give me something like that, you know, like him in an alien crane doing crane shit.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. That would have sort of explained, like, I don't know, fixed that little bit of a problem with Tom Cruise not being a good dead shit dad. But apart from that, still a wonderful film.
I mean, minor gripes.
Yeah, some gripes, as I've discussed in my podcast at length. All right, so as I said, I really do like this movie a bit more than the first movie, but I still don't rate it that highly. I'm actually only going to give it 2.5 internet cafes in Washington, D.C. out of 5. I'm only giving it 2.5 because I gave the first one too, and I feel like I have to talk hyping it up as being the better film. What about you?
So I would do two running through New Orleans on Halloween out of fives. When I heard your, like, what you rated, I was like, fuck, should I go lower? But genuinely, like, there's a lot of technical stuff that's really good in this film. Just, you know, not necessarily stuff I vibe with. So, you know.
Yeah.
2 foot pazoots on All Hallows Eve out of five. Feels right.
Feels perfect. Mm. Absolutely wonderful. Well, that's us for kind of reviewing Jack Reacher 2 and kind of talking about other shit. Go see the movie if you're curious, or don't. Just listen to this podcast and fuck all those movies off if you want. I don't care. I'm not your mum. Marie, where can we find you online?
So you can find me on Instagram as Marie Lewis, and you can find me on Twitter as Marie Lewis. I'm not on Twitter so much because it's an absolute hellhole. But you can read any one of my books. There is 7 of them, and the 8th book comes out in April of 2022. It is the 8th and final book in my series. And yeah, that's me, really. That's it. Oh, actually, no, wait. One other thing. You can listen to an audio documentary I made called Josie and the Podcats, which is all about the 2001 cult film and its sort of journey to cult status. And it ties in sort of like the history of the comics code in America, Archie Comics, the civil rights movement. And there is another show coming up that will be released in, I believe, March of 2022. So keep an eye out for through Nova Podcasts called The Phantom Never Dies, which is another audio documentary I've been working on about the first superhero, the Phantom.
Fuck yes. So if anything that you hate about this podcast, the unprofessionalism, the swearing, inconsistencies.
Don't come to mine expecting any better, because fucking
Josie the podcast was so like beautifully put together and professional, and I'm like, ah yes, that must be what it's like to be a professional in any sense whatsoever.
Bless you. But also different types of shows. Like, I say audio documentary because that's really what it is. Like, if you were closing your eyes, and you could see a documentary playing out. You know what I mean? It's like sourcing archive clips. This is a conversation show, baby. We keep it loose. We keep it goose.
Yes, we do. As for me, you can find me on Instagram, Tom Cruise Reviews, on Twitter, Tom Cruise Review, no S on the end, or everything else is on TomCruiseReviews.com. It's been my pleasure having you on the podcast, Maria.
It's been so good to be here. Thanks for having me on for a Tom Cruise movie I absolutely hate.
I'm glad we fucking figured it out. We did. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.